Sports at the Letters. Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
You know, the tough part of spring training, really get through that first week, pitchers get their work, BP and all that stuff. And I save my judgments to a little bit later on, to be fair to everybody. But we got some good arms, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, we like our pitching.
It's at the Letters for Wednesday, February 15th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. What's going on, man?
Spring training has begun.
It's happening.
Here we are.
It's all happening.
Yeah.
Did baseball end? I don't think it ended.
Well, the offseason certainly didn't. Kept us going there. Slowed to a drip for a while, and now here we are. I'm not going to say baseball because they're not playing games, but baseball activities.
They start playing games like a week or so.
Yeah, they play really early.
It's not far.
Yeah.
I think the Blue Jays had a more active offseason than it seems. Like, a lot of stuff happened.
Yep.
You got Kendrys Morales, Steve Pierce, two bullpen arms. You lose a franchise icon, bevy of minor league signings.
Even losing Saunders and Cecil.
I feel like we're forgetting Dickey. Dickey's the other guy. That's a thing that, like, that's 200 plus innings gone.
Yeah.
That's significant. That's a guy who threw 200 innings every year for the last four, I believe, he was in Toronto. I mean, that's a pretty substantial loss.
Yeah. Fell just short.
This guy made a lot of starts.
169 innings last year. But still, someone who can give you that kind of depth. Out of the rotation, and yeah, it is a loss. I mean, this is why we're talking about a team now that should probably add one more depth arm.
Where would you say R.A. Dickey falls on all-time starts for the Toronto Blue Jays? Like, you think about, you know what I mean? Like, every Toronto Blue Jays pitcher of all time, where do you think he falls?
14th.
Higher.
Really?
11th.
Wow.
Tied with, ahead of. He's 11th. Three starts ahead of Ricky Romero.
Wow.
R.A. Dickey made more starts to the Toronto Blue Jays than Ricky Romero.
Wow. That is surprising.
Ricky made 127. R.A. made 130. He fell just shy of passing Chris Carpenter, who had 135, and David Boomer Wells, who had 138.
Man, and you think of those guys as being a bigger part of Blue Jays franchise history, but
apparently not. Yeah. Dickey made more starts than Mark Burley, Kelvin Escobar. No one else on this. Ted Lilly, I guess. No one else on more than AJ Burnett. But yeah, no, a lot of starts.
Yeah. It's when you're watching a team play, you don't think of these guys as being all-time fixtures of the franchise. But in fact, there are some of those guys on this team. Batista, you know, Russell Martin might be one of the best Blue Jays catchers in history.
I struggle to think of a better... I mean, I wasn't around really to watch like Pat Borders or like Buck Martinez. Right. Or like, I don't know, like how good those guys really were at the time. Russ Martin's the best Blue Jays catcher I've ever seen.
Yeah.
In my short lifetime.
You'd throw guys like Ernie Witt and Greg Zahn into that mix as far as the all-timers, but Russell Martin is guaranteed a top 10 Blue Jays catcher of all time.
Greg Zahn, all-timer. I have to send him this pod. He's going to love that.
He's definitely one of the top 10 Blue Jays catchers ever.
All-timer.
Of course.
Yeah, let's look up the Blue Jays catchers games played. Ernie Witt, number one for sure. Pat Borders, Darren Fletcher, and there's Greg Zahn in fourth, ahead of Buck.
Yeah.
Wow. 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 So yeah, it's at the Letters. We're not just going to mine the Blue Jays all-time games played leaderboards. We're going to talk about some stuff that's going on with the Blue Jays right now. In the second half, we're going to talk to Shai Davidi, who is in Dunedin, Florida. We'll talk to him. He had a great story on Russ Martin that's up at sportsnet.ca that I recommend everybody go read. So we're going to talk to him about that, talk to him about our old pal Gibby, talk to him a bit about who might be the leadoff hitter for this team, and we'll just figure out if anything's going on. This is like don't get hurt camp. That's what it is to me. It's over the next 6 weeks, Toronto Blue Jays, pitchers, catchers, position players, you have one goal. Okay, you have two goals. Goal number one, get your ass ready to play in the regular season. That should be pretty easy. A lot of these guys have been working out all offseason. Baseball, it's not the 1970s anymore. Year-round, high-performance athletes. Goal number two, perhaps even more important than goal number one, don't get hurt.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to get hurt.
Someone always does. Yeah, for sure. I think that's the goal. And I mean, extending it over this period of time, too, is, some would say unnecessary. I mean, if you were to ask the players, okay, guilt-free, how long do you need for spring training to truly get ready? If you were to ask let's say, Jose Bautista or, you know, Troy Tulowitzki. How many weeks do you think they would actually choose if, you know, they don't, if there was no stigma surrounding it?
Three.
Yeah.
3 to 4.
I think it'd
what
be
do
three.
You think?
I think it'd be three.
Three. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think a pitcher would say?
Maybe closer to four.
Right?
A little longer.
I think a pitcher might even say 4 to 5.
You think they need 5 weeks?
I don't know. Some like I don't, you know, portend to be an expert on arm mechanics and what it takes to get an arm ready. I was reading some comments from Marco Estrada yesterday, and he was kind of saying he wasn't sure if he's gonna be ready for the WBC. And he was saying, it's not my back, it's my arm.
Right.
Like, I'm not sure. You know, he was saying how he hasn't thrown a curveball yet. He hasn't thrown a changeup yet. How he's just trying to get his fastball down, and then he'll start trying to, you know, rework or relearn, rebuild, whatever the great word is for his secondary stuff. So, look, I think a lot of pitchers maybe take a different amount of time to get their arms ready. And you're trying to condition your arm for, you know, for a marathon, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I would say maybe 4 to 5 weeks for pitchers. Yeah, 3 to 4 for hitters.
Yeah, I don't think they need more.
No, not at all. But then everybody would make less money.
Yeah, right? I mean, there's a whole industry around spring training.
Yeah.
Setting aside major league stadiums that are minor league, or, you know, you have these spring training facilities where you have fans pouring in and you have interest generated year round. Major League Baseball loves being in the spotlight year round. This is a great way to make that happen for Major League Baseball.
This is tourism, man. This is bigger than sports. You know, these are, you know, the Blue Jays are committed to the city of Dunedin to, you know, have like 16 home games or 17 home games, whatever it is, every spring.
And that's why they get these big contributions from the city and the state and the county, and they're able to construct a facility that is going to be much improved over what they currently have.
So that people can go and watch Jeff Beliveau make starts in spring training, watch Devin Travis play about 2 innings, and then come out for somebody who's wearing a jersey number somewhere in the 80s.
Do they have names on spring training?
No.
I think they might this year. I think they might have added them.
I would like it if they did. Last year, I remember I did, as an aside, I did some radio with Wilner. We called, and you did some of these as well for spring games. We're going to be doing them again this year, actually.
Should be fun.
Schedule last night, but I did the inter-squad game with Wilner on the Fan 590.
Wow.
So you've got like, you're just looking at numbers on the jerseys. And as you know, in spring training, you might get 3 guys who are wearing number 58, you know, like you might have 4 guys who are wearing number 72 because there's so many guys in camp. And then the teams, they were like trading players mid game. Cause look, it's an inter-squad game. You're just trying to see different guys in different spots, right? They would redo at bats. They would like switch out pitchers like crazy. And we were just kind of like scrambling to figure out like who some of these guys were. So if there were names on the jerseys, big help.
Yeah. No, I think for fans too, right? If you're showing up to a game, you know, who could be expected to know every last minor league invitee? I mean, there are tons of these guys. You can't possibly keep track of it all.
Exactly. One guy who is being kept track of, I would say excessively, is Joe Biagini. That is kind of the early story of camp. Is what is he going to do? What is Joe going to do? Is Joe Biagini going to be a reliever? He was so good as a reliever last year. Or are the Blue Jays going to leverage him as a starter? He was a starter earlier in his career. He would be willing to go to Buffalo and be that sixth starter. And the Blue Jays certainly lack starting pitching depth. What is he going to do? He's being stretched out right now. Where do you fall, Ben, on this hot debate?
To me, I honestly look at it in a pretty, for now at least, in a pretty straightforward way. Yep. I think they stretch him out just in case there's an injury. If there's not an injury, then he ends up going to the back of the bullpen, not as a closer, obviously, that's a soonest job, but as a late inning guy. I don't think they envision him as a multi-inning guy. I don't think that they want him to be a mop-up man. I think they want him to be a 7th or 8th inning reliever who can get some big outs for them.
I'm with you on that. I think that ultimately Joe Biagini ends up in the bullpen. I think, and I'm not, you know, I don't know if the Blue Jays are considering this. I think you could turn him into like a Brad Brock type, or even a Dellin Betances. Not quite as good, but a guy who maybe pitches 80 to 90 innings out of the bullpen. A guy who's coming in for 4 or 5 outs, not just 3. You know, a multi-inning guy who can pitch in those high leverage spots. Joe Biagini, I believe, proved down the stretch, and especially in the playoffs, he can handle pressure situations. He can pitch in high leverage spots. He can get really good hitters out. He's got enough of a repertoire that he could face 4, 5, 6 hitters, and guys aren't, you know, going to key on. It's not like a traditional reliever where, you know, okay, I've got 2 good pitches. And once guys have seen them enough, they're like, all right, I got this guy figured out. Joe Biagini's got like 4 good pitches. So, and he's got velocity. He's obviously a very well-built young man. He's large, so I think that he can withstand that workload. Make him your Betances. Make him your Brock. That's my idea for Joe Biagini, and get the most value out of him that way.
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. And if you're going to use him in that way, then you're talking about using him in high-leverage spots. So this is a chance to get the most out of one of your few most reliable arms in a bullpen that really, I mean, this group right now, I mean, if Roberto Osuna were to go down for whatever reason,
right?
I mean, this would be a really thin group. So they need guys like Biagini. They need him in those big spots.
Hell yeah. And, you know, I think some of the debate around Joe Biagini just speaks to kind of the lack of starting pitching depth in this organization right now. Like, look, 1 through 5, it's a really good rotation, I think. I think it's a very strong, balanced rotation. You don't have a significant drop-off. Francisco Liriano is your fifth starter, and he has, you know, he can go out there with ace stuff. I mean, he can go out there and strike out 12. He can also go out there and walk 6. But look, if Francisco Liriano is your fifth starter and, you know, Marcus Stroman's your fourth, like a really promising young pitcher, you got a pretty good rotation. It's kind of the 6, 7, 8 that you're a bit worried about. And that's why I think a lot of people, you know, want to see Joe Biagini fit in there. Other options that the Blue Jays have kind of signed to like minor league deals, you know, Gavin Floyd, Brett Oberholzer is a name that keeps coming up and I don't think should be ignored. TJ House, Lucas Harrell. There's nobody in that group, though, that really stands out to you as like, oh, this situation is taken care of.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you're not going to sleep easy until one of these guys or a few of these guys end up stepping up and showing the Blue Jays in spring training that they are able to kind of recapture what they've done before. And I think the Jays do end up adding one arm to this group, maybe even before too long, just because that need exists for this team. The more options they have, the better.
Still plenty of kind of veteran starter types that are out there that perhaps could be had on minor league deals. Bring them in and see if you can, you know, see what they've got in spring. And then at the end of camp, see if you can sneak them through to Buffalo.
Right. And the nice thing is, if you're the Jays right now, you do have a little bit of leverage just because you look around at other guys who have signed minor league deals. You have guys like Chris Medlin, Yusmeiro Petit, Matt Albers. These are veteran type guys who are having to take minor league deals. If you're the Jays, I don't think that you have to hand over a roster spot. And I don't think they want to because they've had to clear a couple spots recently. AJ Jimenez off the roster. Yeah. They're still at 40. I don't know that they necessarily have an easy cut to make when it comes to potentially freeing up some roster space.
You know, that's interesting that we are talking about a lack of depth, but we could also talk about how there isn't an obvious player on the 40-man roster that you would say he's the next to go. You know, like I really do think the Blue Jays front office has done a good job of building out some depth on their 40-man roster. And look, they've been helped that they've had guys like Anthony Alford added to there. You know, Lourdes Gurriel is on there, and he was a recent signing. I think Harold Ramirez is on there. They've added some young talent. But yeah, when you look at Chad Girardeau and AJ Jimenez both coming off of that roster, you know, those are kind of established organization pieces in a way. It's interesting that there really isn't an obvious next cut if you were to bring in someone else.
Maybe Dominic Leone, who found himself on waivers earlier in the offseason, but you know, they claimed him for a reason. They like him. So I don't think that there is an easy cut like you were saying there. I was a little surprised to see AJ Jimenez gone. I mean, this is someone who for a long time looked like, not that he was ever going to be Buster Posey, but he seemed as though he had some promise, at least defensively, maybe offensively too, and then it just never came together for him, and there he goes.
He was an old management piece, right? I mean, he was an Alex Anthopoulos and Tony LaCava, Andrew Tinnish type of guy, and maybe, you know, Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro felt a bit differently about him. I wasn't necessarily surprised to see him come off the 40-man. A little surprised that he was released, but that also kind of speaks to maybe he has another opportunity somewhere. Maybe he told the Blue Jays, like, hey, look, I've got, whatever, it's overseas, or there's another organization where I think I have a better chance of winning a major league spot, whatever. Or maybe he just kind of said, well, it's not going to happen here. Let me test the waters and see what's out there. But there's going to have, because I kind of assumed that he would come off when Jared Saltalamacchia came on.
Yeah.
Jared Solts-Lemacki is still not on the 40-man roster.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, Jared Solts-Lemacki is going to be the backup catcher for this team.
Right.
So he's going to have to come on that roster at some point.
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, we're getting really into the transactional depths here.
What else are we going to do?
Yeah. But I think that there are a lot of teams around baseball this time of year that start moving guys to the 60-day DL, and that's a way to clear up a 40-man spot.
That's a good point.
For the Jays, they don't necessarily have someone at this point. I'm sure they're knocking on wood as we say this. They don't necessarily have someone who's an obvious candidate to move to the 60-day DL. It's not like, you know, this time last year, maybe Devin Travis is someone that you shift over there, give him time to recover, and then you clear up a spot. So if there were to be an injury of some kind, not that the Jays are hoping for that, of course, but that's one way that you would get a spot. Otherwise, you end up in this familiar place where you're trying to create space out of nowhere.
Just combing through it right now, the one name that sticks out is Glenn Sparkman. Who, look, I think the Blue Jays took him in earnest in the Rule of Five draft. I think they liked what they saw, and I think they thought he could be a part of it. I wonder if the moves that have come after Glenn Sparkman was chosen at the winter meetings have, like, made it, I think it's next to impossible that he makes this team right now. And that would be a 40-man spot opened up. Although, hey, look, Glenn Sparkman started until he's been a starter throughout his minor league career. Maybe the Blue Jays take a look at him as a starter in spring. I don't know.
You can't. Well, I guess you could, but then he's in your big league rotation.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
I don't know. And then maybe they try to get him to. Do you think that if they offered him back to the Royals would automatically take him?
Sure. I mean, for them, it's consequence free because they can still handle him. They can handle him differently without having to have him at the big league level.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's just not a lot of room at the back of that bullpen, because right now, let's say they have five, you've essentially got two spots then, because I'm assuming they go with a 7-man bullpen that gives you two spots for all these different names that we've talked about, many of whom are out of options, like the Bolsingers of the world. So you end up with not that much room.
Mike Bolsinger and Bo Schultz, both out of options. So look, if you're trying to preserve depth, those are your final two guys in the bullpen, right? And like, look, someone's going to get hurt. There's going to be changes. I mean, it's April. It's not April. It's February 15th. It's kind of folly to even talk about it now. But yeah, if you're looking to preserve depth, I mean, you can't option those two guys. So something's going to have to give.
Yeah, exactly.
But hey, too many pitchers who could factor into your bullpen. That's an okay problem to have.
For sure. It's what they've been trying to do. Now, of course, every team this year probably feels like they have a lot of options. And within 3 weeks into the season, we'll probably be talking about whether it's the Jays or some other clubs around baseball. Those options have a tendency to disappear pretty quickly once you have a few poor performances and then someone else is hurt. And all of a sudden, that depth can disappear on you in a hurry.
I wonder if the Blue Jays would start the season with an 8-man bullpen just to, you know, keep some players around, right? Like, I should look it up, but I believe that's what they did last year. Where they just started with an 8-man bullpen just to, you know, so they didn't have to lose anyone. And then they kind of got to a 7-man, you know, a couple series into the season.
I don't think they can this year just because of the way, because on your bench, you need to have four players. You're going to have your backup catcher. We're all presuming that's Salty.
Yes.
So
I love how you're going with Salty. You're going with it. No, buy in, man. Commit.
Yeah.
Commit.
I don't know. I feel like it's.
Dive in.
Everyone calls him Salty.
Buddy, if you're going to get wet, go swimming.
There we go. So then Steve Pierce is going to be on the bench. Mm. So that's two. You need a backup middle infielder. You have to have one. We're assuming that's Darwin Barney.
Yep.
And Ryan Goins in this situation is off the roster.
Yeah.
And Melvin Upton Jr. I mean, you've got him. So that's four. I mean,
Carrera
so,
and Upton Jr.
Yeah. So to me, that really doesn't leave a lot of room unless someone's hurt. That maybe changes things. But at this point, I think they can only go with a 7-man bullpen.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about it like that. I'm quickly looking up. Yeah, Ezekiel Carrera does not have options. So that's a guy that's going to be on the roster. Melvin Upton, definitely does not have options. And it's not a guy that I think that you would be sending down. So yeah, you're right. You do have to go with four guys. Bigger rosters, man. Let's go back to that CBA. Got that 26, 27-man roster in here.
Yeah, that would have been. I would have been fine with that.
I would have been fine with that too.
Although it would have changed the entire game. I mean, it just would have been one more pitcher for everyone. It would have been one, you know, more pitching changes.
Yeah, I would have been the thing I've kind of advocated for sometimes is that you could have like a 30-man roster, but you only get to pick 25 for the game. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that would be good during the during September.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden there's 40 guys around and you know, Joe Girardi gets to making 15 pitching changes in a night. I think that, you know, you can carry 30 players, but you have to select 25 that are eligible for that night's game.
Yeah.
Although managers would get around it by just putting their four other starters off the, as I think about it now.
So maybe you reduce the number. Maybe you only have 20 eligible for a certain game.
Yeah, maybe you do something like that. Yeah. I don't know. We're probably not going to reinvent baseball sitting here right now. Chris Smith is a name that I think people should be looking at as a bullpen candidate. Big velocity, kind of an interesting story. He had a great year last season, struck out a ton of batters, got up to AAA, was actually called up to the Blue Jays in September. Didn't get into any games, but I think that's a name that people need to be watching. Danny Barnes is a name that you hear thrown around a lot. You know, he's going to be in that bullpen mix. You know, Ryan Tepera, I imagine, is going to be riding that AAA shuttle once again, bouncing up and down. Aaron Loop might suffer a similar fate. I believe he has options left.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with guys like Tepera and Barnes. They're essentially going to bounce back up and down all season long. And to them, you know, Loop also in that same boat. Whether they're on the opening day roster is almost irrelevant. They're going to be shuttled back and forth all year. They're going to figure in. I mean, we know the Blue Jays view these guys as big league caliber contributors, and they may very well be forced off the opening day roster in spite of that.
You mentioned left field a moment ago. Sounds like the Carrera Upton platoon, or maybe more Upton than Carrera, is what we're going to see. How do you feel about that?
It's one of the bigger questions they face.
Yeah.
I just think that when you talk about Ezekiel Carrera as someone who's going to be playing more than occasionally, then you're opening yourself up to some risk. You know, we've talked about Dalton Pompey a couple times, and we've even wondered about the possibility of an outside acquisition.
I mean,
do they look at around the major leagues toward the end of spring training, you end up having guys who are in the same roster bubble position that we're talking about with the Jays bullpen. So maybe there's a trade to be made to add a piece and just see if there's someone out there who can contribute and who is basically freely available.
That would mean punting on an Upton or a Carrera, which is something that I know fans necessarily probably wouldn't have the biggest issue with. Look, the Blue Jays, they really do like what Ezekiel Carrera brings. I think they like him as a fourth outfielder, which I think we should all like him as. He's a great fourth outfielder. Plays occasionally. You don't see him too much. Maybe he can pinch run a bit late in games. He's got a bit of speed. Although not a great base stealer. Not great base stealing acumen. But he is fast. And he gives you some okay defense. You can kind of outrun the poor routes that he takes sometimes. And then Melvin Upton Jr. is like, look, he's a $1 million like gamble. And he was good in San Diego in a worse hitting environment. He played well for them. And then he came to Toronto and just kind of looked lost for 3.5 months or however long he was here. So I think the Blue Jays do want to see if, there is still something there from Melvin Upton Jr. Like, look, if Melvin Upton Jr. played every day for Toronto Blue Jays in left field this year, gets spelled by Carrera a little bit, maybe Pierce factors in a little bit. But if he played every day and he did what he did in San Diego last season, first 92 games of the season was San Diego in 2016, Melvin Upton Jr., had a 743 OPS. Got on base at a 304 clip. Not great. Struck out a ton. But 743 OPS because he hit 16 dingers. He had 11 doubles, 2 triples. I mean, he didn't really walk a lot. If he put up a 743 OPS playing every day in left field for the Toronto Blue Jays, is that the worst thing in the world?
No, that's fine.
And he just did that last year.
Yeah,
exactly. So I think the Blue Jays believe that there is reason to believe that he could do that again.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where they're, as much as they're going to be losing Encarnacion and Michael Saunders, they do have a couple of guys offensively where you could dream about bigger offensive seasons. Devin Travis, Jose Bautista, these guys missed some time with injury last year. Justin Smoke cratered in the second half. He's a guy that you could look for as a potential source of more production. And that, of course, is...
You can only go up from here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It was a slow finish for Justin Smoke. But on the pitching side, of course, as we've talked about, you end up with a group that, man, if they replicate what they did last year, the Jays are looking at another playoff run because they were that good in 2016.
Do you think there's reason for offensive optimism this year? It's just kind of, pivoting off what you just said. Do you think there's reason to believe that the Blue Jays could be a better team offensively this year? Is the loss of Edwin Encarnacion going to be just too much for the Blue Jays to overcome? Or is there reason to believe that maybe, hey, you get Kendrys Morales into a good hitting, good hitting environment. Hey, Josh Donaldson is in the prime of, putting up year after year of MVP numbers. Jose Bautista, in what is essentially a walk year, had a down year last year. You could expect some more from him. Maybe you get a healthy Devin Travis. Maybe Troy Tulowitzki is able to refine some of the, he was bad for stretches last year, but maybe he's able to be more consistent this year. Do you think there's a little room for offensive optimism, or am I reaching too hard on this?
I would say that, so last year they were fifth in the American League in runs scored, and they were third in on-base percentage, seventh in slugging percentage. So you're looking at clearly an above-average group. I think this team is above-average offensively. I think we have every reason to expect a group that will score more than average. At the same time, they're not elite offensively in the same way that they were in 2015 or in the same way that the Red Sox were last year. So to me, I think fifth is about right. If I had to push one way or the other, I'd say closer to sixth or seventh in the league as opposed to third or fourth. But I think they're probably a comparable offensive team to where they were last year.
Josh Donaldson has gotten better every year since 2012. And
it's like, insane.
It's pretty remarkable when you consider, he'll be 31 this year, late bloomer, a guy who was like a quad A type of player with Oakland for a while. Just year after year, he keeps getting better. Like last year, the counting stats aren't quite there, but you look at, the rate stats and stuff, and he's improving. He's getting better.
Yeah. He's inner circle among the best players in baseball, right? Like you're talking about, of course, you got your Mike Trouts and your Bryce Harpers and your Manny Machados. Josh Donaldson, a little older than those guys, so you're not going to consider him that up-and-coming face of the game the way Mike Trout is, but this guy is insanely productive. I mean, he's just having the kind of season that three or four guys in the game have in a given year.
Last year, he increased his walk rate and reduced his strikeout rate, just looking at it right now, which is a good way to be heading. He got on base at the highest clip of his career. He put up the highest OPS and OPS plus of his career. He didn't have as many hits as he had in 2015 or as he had in 2013. But, he wasn't getting pitches to hit. And he's shown an ability to just, I'll take my walks. I will wait for my pitch. I will be patient. And that plate approach, I think, has really improved for him. It's going to be interesting to see. Maybe he gets even better this year.
Sure.
I saw pictures of him yesterday. He looks like he's in phenomenal shape.
Does he look like he's added muscle?
He looks a bit bulk. Yeah, a bit.
That was my thought when I saw the photo on John Lott's Twitter.
He looks a bit more cut, but I think Josh Donaldson is a guy who can lose muscle over the season. All ball players lose muscle over the season. I remember seeing him at the end of last year and thinking man, this guy looks a little bit worn out. And he played through a lot of injuries last year, man. Like he was pretty banged up. When a guy's going for, and we'll talk to Shai Davidi about this later, but when a guy's going for, MRIs on his hips mid-season, it's not a good sign.
Oh,
there's a reason they're doing that.
He kept the Blue Jays training staff very busy for the last month of the season.
Absolutely.
Put it that way.
Yeah. So, if a healthy Josh Donaldson, and if he's bulked up and in a, in a good state physically coming into this year, man, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, especially offensively. You wonder about those power numbers. I mean, this is someone who has been a complete player. That's why he's an 8-win player by wins above replacement. But, if he's building on that strength, then maybe you're looking at someone who's in a great home run park and in a good lineup. You could see those power numbers really, keeping steady in that 40 homer range. Maybe he's able to keep hitting 40 homers a year. That's a huge bar to reach.
It's a big ask.
Yeah.
Devin Travis, another guy who, reports from Dunedin that he's in great shape and he's been working hard. And during the offseason, I know he's been down there throughout the offseason working on stuff and just trying to put together a full season without injury. He really has been unfortunate with the injuries that he has suffered over the last couple of years. I mean, it's just been hard for him to stay on the field. But he looks good. Blue Jays training staff says he is good. They say he's 100% ready to go. If you got a full season of Devin Travis, because he's shown that he has a good bat at the major league level, a full season of Devin Travis could be a really big thing for this ball club.
If you're the Blue Jays and I offer you guaranteed 100 games from Devin Travis in 2017, you can either take it or you can roll the dice and see what's going to happen. What do you do?
I roll the dice.
Yeah?
I bet on my guy.
I think I would take it.
You just take the 100?
A lot of games.
Yeah, no, that is a lot of games. Last year, he played 101.
Yeah.
So you'd basically be getting last year's Devin Travis.
Yeah, I think I would take that.
I'd roll the dice, man. Just knowing how committed he's been to conditioning and to, you know, improving his body and like, you know, being healthy.
Man, not to question his commitment at all. I mean, he is definitely prepared and puts in all the work. And, you know, by all accounts, someone who works, you know, really, really hard. It's just, it's tough to stay on a baseball field.
Let me pose the same question to you. Re-won Jose Bautista. Guaranteed 100 games, or do you roll the dice?
I'm rolling the dice on Bautista because historically he's played more than 100 games a lot of different times. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't necessarily been 162, but he's a guy who has played a lot of games. Let's see here.
2014, 155. 2015, 153.
Yeah. And even so last
over
year...
Over 650 plate appearances each year.
And last year was 116, even in a year where he did miss time. So I would take, for Bautista... That threshold will be more like 120, that breaking point.
I think the ceiling is so high with Bautista that you roll the dice. That's the thing. Because if you do get, you know, like 650 plus plate appearances out of him, I mean, you're going to get a lot of production.
Yeah. You're looking at 35 home runs.
Exactly. Yeah. You're looking at a ton of walks. You know, that's still the thing that I find remarkable about Jose Bautista is his ability to take a walk. He only played 116 games last year. He still walked 87 times.
Yeah.
I don't think people give him enough credit for how difficult that is.
Yeah. You know, for sure. It's tough to do. And not a lot of players in Major League Baseball do that.
Especially when, like, the book is really out on him. Like, people know, like, don't throw him anything hard inside. He's going to turn on it and he's going to starch it. But, like, you know, I think the pitchers have had success with attacking Jose Bautista on the outer half of the plate. You know, the book says everybody knows who he is as a hitter. He really hasn't changed his approach as a hitter since his breakout 6 years ago or whatever. And he still manages to get on base at an amazing clip.
You can make the case that Batista's been a model for a type of player around Major League Baseball. And Donaldson obviously fits into this. But guys who sell out for power, Brian Dozier fits into this, where they pull the ball to the pull side. And they wait for a certain pitch in a certain part of the plate and they hammer it. And Bautista was ahead of the curve. He did it in 2010. Now we're seeing a lot more guys do that. And it seems to work for some of these players.
They've almost kind of like cannibalized their own market in a way. Because it used to be like home runs pay. And so now everybody's trying to sell out for power and hit home runs. Now home run hitters don't get paid anymore because so many guys are hitting home runs.
Yeah, that's an interesting point when you put it that way.
Right?
Yeah, it's true.
You know, I'm sure that's what Jose Bautista thought when he started, you know, just trying to, you know, pull everything into the seats. He was like, I'm going to get paid for this someday. Didn't quite work out that way.
Right. When he hit 54 home runs in 2010, that was right around the time that Ryan Howard, a lesser player than Bautista, signed a $125 million deal.
Man, you can like go more recent. Chris Davis. You look at the deal he signed last offseason.
Yeah, $160 million. Prince Fielder, $214.
Right.
And Bautista, $18.5 million.
Chris Davis is, to me, like not, I'd much rather have Jose Bautista because at least he gets on base.
Davis gets on.
Not as much as Jose Bautista.
No, not as much.
And I would say that they have similar power. I'm just kind of talking off the top of my head right now.
Yeah, the power. I think the power is comparable. As far as home run totals in the last...
Chris Davis's OBP has got to be like 320, 330, something like that.
His career OBP is 330.
330. Jose Bautista is a guy who could have a 400 OBP.
Right.
He has had it.
Yeah.
Career 368.
Yep. No, he's definitely better. But Davis isn't Mark Trumbo.
No, exactly. But yeah, Jose Bautista had a 400 OBP in 2014, 377 in 2015, and in a down year in 2016, a down year, 366. Give me Jose Bautista over Chris Davis.
Yeah.
You don't agree?
I'd have to look at it.
The age is a thing.
Well, and defense, Davis too. Defense, too.
Yeah, different positions. Chris Davis playing first base. Jose Bautista playing right field.
Yeah, well... Chris Davis.
Did he play right field last year? Am I wrong on that?
No, he's mostly
first base DH at this point, right?
Yeah.
I'd have to look at first base.
You wonder. And yet Davis.
Like, if you moved Jose Bautista to first base, maybe he'd be all right. Maybe he'd be a comparable defender.
Yeah. I
You're so
I
not
doubt
with
that.
Me. You're
no.
so not with me yeah, on this.
I doubt that.
Take me on, man.
No, I would have to look at it.
That's for nerds, man. Nerds look at stuff and consider their arguments. Just talk off the top of your head.
Yeah.
Just say whatever pops into your head.
As if you don't bring up pages constantly as we're talking.
Well, it's probably a discussion for another day. But a discussion for today. will be with Shai Davidi, who is in studying in Florida and who will join us after the break when we continue on At The Letters. Very pleased to be joined now over the phone from Dunedin, Florida, by Sportsnet.ca baseball columnist Shai Davidi. Shai, thanks for joining us. You are in Dunedin at Blue Jays camp. You've been with the team. You know, from our perspective, seems like a spring that is somewhat devoid of storylines, certainly devoid of drama to this point. But I'm just curious what you have, if anything stuck out to you in your time with the team so far, if anything has been interesting or caught your eye.
Well, your initial assessment is very correct. I mean, this is a team that is largely settled, but they do have a few question marks. And I think the primary ones are going to be in the bullpen and how that shakes out and Joe Biagini's status within that as a potential swing guy or maybe a depth option that gets down to AAA Buffalo to get experience starting, depending on how the bullpen composition plays out. But that's really... The main area of intrigue as this camp gets going. It's just the first workout today. There'll be some focus on a bit about how first base shakes out between Steve Pierce and Justin Smoke. And, you know, whether Pierce is able to throw effectively and safely from the outfield in time for opening day, which would probably make him a significant factor in the left field mix with Ezekiel Carrera and Melvin Upton Jr. So those are some of the key points. I think people will also be watching Jose Bautista closely once he gets going to see how he's emerged from last season when he had the knee and the toe injuries that hampered him. But otherwise, it is a camp that's going to lack in some drama unless something changes.
You wrote yesterday about Russell Martin and some of the physical challenges that he was facing toward the end of last year. In talking to Martin, what's your sense of just how banged up he was down the stretch in 2016?
It sounded that it was pretty awful, especially when he split his finger low-fiving Troy Tulowitzki in the celebration after the wild card win. And he couldn't wrap his left pinky finger around the bat and couldn't really plant his left leg as he was swinging the bat. And that's a pretty tough way to hit, and I think it showed in the numbers. But, you know, he made the point that this is something that he's prepared to deal with, that you have to, a player in his position has to ready himself to take the field with whatever he's got available to him on a certain day, and that's what he did. But he's obviously much more excited right now about feeling better. His knee got cleaned up in surgery in mid-December. He feels much better in that regard now. He feels more athletic, he feels more limber, and that can make a big difference for him. So he's excited about all that and being able to take the field in better shape, and he's in a better state of mind as a result of it, because it was such a grind for him towards the end of the year.
Yeah, it's a great piece on Russell Martin. I recommend everybody goes to sportsnet.ca and reads it. You know, today of all days is Russell Martin's 34th birthday. So first of all, happy birthday, Russ.
Wow.
Second of all, you know, just from reading the piece, it seemed like you really got a sense of, you know, some changes he made to his training in the off season, and maybe some ways that he's, you know, just kind of doing things differently as he gets older and as he becomes a 34-year-old. What kind of a sense did you get of how he is kind of evolving and adapting the way that, you know, he conditions himself and approaches the game as he gets into kind of the back nine of his career?
Yeah, well, he certainly seems to be embracing the Blue Jays high performance department and leaning on them in terms of ways of becoming smarter. He also mentioned, and I didn't include this in the piece, but you know, how much he's been learning from Jose Bautista as well in terms of maintaining balance, muscular balance throughout the body, and looking to find inconsistencies. The way Russ put it is that, you know, if there's any weak spot within the chain that travels along the core, of muscles in the body. If there's any weak spot, then you get a leak in strength, and that creates vulnerabilities to injury. So he's really been focused on making sure that there are no vulnerabilities in his core, that there is good muscle, because so much of what baseball players do is a one-sided motion. You know, if you're swinging right-handed all the time, you know, that's creating an imbalance within your body. You know, you're throwing your right arm, that's creating an imbalance with your body. So, you know, the focus on trying to maintain some of those balances to prevent injuries has been a focal point for him as well. He's moved away from, you know, some of the weight training that he used to do when he was younger. And he made the point that, you know, weights are great, but, you know, you can do a lot of the similar stuff with the, you know, elastic resistance, swimming. In the Instagram post he sent out of him in the pool with Canadian Paralympian training, you know, that's an example of the kind of stuff that he's doing to get himself ready physically, because he's not just able to work relentlessly the way that he did when he was young now, and so he's trying to be a little bit smart about things.
Are you surprised at all that he was this banged up? Because at the time, I mean, I guess it's in athletes' natures to downplay any sort of physical ailments they're feeling and try to power through. And at the time, anything that we would hear from Martin or Gibbons would essentially be, "Hey, I'm fine. I'm good to go. He's out there. He's good to go." Is it surprising in retrospect to hear that he actually was dealing with this much physical stress?
I don't think so, because you could see it on him towards the end, especially, right? I mean, you know, he looked like he was in rough shape toward latter part of September and in October. And you could tell he was going. And he wasn't alone. There were a lot of guys on that team who were pretty banged up. You know, Josh Donaldson went through a very tough stretch where you could see him ailing the field. And Troy Tulowitzki had his struggles to stay on the field. I mean, it's part and parcel of the game. When Russ said, if everyone who was banged up didn't take the field, nobody would be out there. And, you know, that's part of the grind that you get over 162 games. But I think what was interesting was that Russ kind of opened up a little bit on some of the things that he was going through, that, you know, he was thinking about, you know, what was going to happen if he was going to catch a foul tip, you know, what he was going to have, the kind of pain that he was going to have to deal with if certain things happened. And he said that it was very tough for him to try and block that stuff out, but he had to block it out as best you can. But he's only a human being, and so those thoughts were creeping in your head. So the interesting thing to me was the mental aspect of it as much as the physical one.
It looks like you and some other reporters down there also got to talk to John Gibbons yesterday. Some truly excellent photos coming out of John Lotz. Always tremendous photo feed. You know, you got Gibby leaning back. Cowboy boots are up on the desk. He's got the smirk going. You know, it really looks like the stress of the job is getting to him. You know, Gibby is so consistent. He's very much the same guy from day to day. I'm curious if you gleaned anything from him that you know was interesting or different or that, you know, just caught your eye when you were talking to him yesterday.
Well, Arden, you tweeted that it was, I think you said it was the quintessential photo of Gibby.
Yeah.
And I was going to quibble with you a little bit and just say there were sleeves in that picture. if there were no sleeves, then it would have been perfect.
Good point.
But
you got me there.
But he's exactly the same. And, you know, obviously the subject matter of a contract extension for him came up. And, you know, it sure sounds like both sides have a common interest and enough common ground to get it done. And it's just sort of one of those items that wasn't pressing and so was put on the back burner. At least that's the impression that we've gotten from the conversations with John Gibbons and, you know, what Ross Atkins has had to say. So it sounds like that's going to get done, which will be another little bit of stability. And it's very interesting because I think when Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro took over, the expectation was that John Gibbons was going to end up on the chopping block very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Instead, that relationship has worked in a way I don't think many of us anticipated. And, you know, it's kind of funny too, because, you know, you don't think of it this way, but John Gibbons is the second winningest manager in Blue Jays history. He's only the third manager to guide them to the postseason, Cito Gaston and Bobby Cox being the others. He's got two playoff trips now. You know, it's you know, people love to question him. People love to take shots at him. But at some point, you would think that he should get some of the respect that he deserves because of all that he's accomplished.
We were talking before about players who were banged up toward the end of last year, and you mentioned Josh Donaldson, who would have had to be at the very top of that list, requiring daily treatment and all kinds of preparation just to take the field toward the end of the season. What's your sense of where he's at physically right now?
Well, we haven't had a chance to speak with him just yet. I saw him working out briefly yesterday, but I haven't had a chance to chat with him. But everything I've heard is positive, and that he's feeling better and he's feeling stronger. And really, there was there was no concern. I think Josh Donaldson had a great quip in Anaheim. I think it was last September when he said the doctor that examined him said that he had terrific hips for a 29 or 30 year old athlete, which is what he was at the time. And barring anything that unexpected that would have come up in the off season, I don't think there was any reason to change. But basically, what he needed was rest, and he needed it at a time where it was impossible to get. So, unless there's some sort of surprise, I think the Blues are expecting him to be 100% and ready to go. And they'll obviously be trying to manage him a little more effectively this year too. But, he's another guy like Russ Martin who competes very hard, is stubborn, doesn't want to come out of the lineup. And that's really what the type of player that you need on your team to succeed.
I think leadoff hitter is always an interesting thing to talk about, because I think that, as the game develops, managers are starting to realize, look, you only lead off once. It's the only, it's not, you want to put your best hitters at the top of the lineup rather than your traditional speed contact guys, maybe. Where do you think that, John Gibbons and the Blue Jays stand on who they want to lead off for this team?
That's a good question. And I looked up the numbers, and basically last year the three main leadoff hitters that the Blue Jays had were Jose Bautista, Ezekiel Carrera, and Devin Travis, and each of them was right around 40 games, give or take a couple. So it was a pretty even split. The sense I've gotten right now is that the Blue Jays would love to see Devin Travis take the job and run with it. Especially now with Edwin Encarnacion gone, even though Kendrys Morales is here, I think the Blue Jays want Jose Bautista in a position to drive in some runs and deliver some production, as opposed to helping create some offense in the top of the lineup. And, Ezekiel Carrera, while he's had some great spurts, I think right now the consensus is a better place for him is probably in the ninth spot as a second leadoff hitter when he's in the game. Now, one interesting thing is that I'd heard there a suggestion that, Steve Pearce could see some time at leadoff against left-handed pitchers. He mashes lefties. Last year, his OPS was over 1,000 against lefties, and I'm sure you'd want that high up in your lineup against left-handed pitchers. But it seems right now that's not the kind of consideration that, Devin Travis is going to get a chance to take the spot and run with it. And if he stays healthy, there's no reason to think that he won't be effective at it.
Last year, the Jays rotation pitched more innings than any other rotation in Major League Baseball, almost 1,000 innings, and that has got to take a toll. Obviously, the offseason is going to build back some strength for those guys, but do you have a sense of how the Jays are going to handle their starters' workloads, particularly in spring training? Like, would they do anything to manage that workload any differently for their five starters?
Well, you remember that there were a couple of guys that they sort of slowed up a little bit last year, and Marco Estrada was one of them, but that was and it was partly related to his back, but it was also to manage his arm, because he had never thrown as many innings as he had thrown back in 2015. And so that's what I really see the Blue Jays doing, just sort of taking their time, building guys up and not rushing them, letting them start a bit deeper in the spring, especially too, because this is a spring that starts earlier than previous years because of the World Baseball Classic.
Right.
So there is some extra time so they can really pace them out a bit more. And that will give them an opportunity to take a look at some guys, give them an opportunity to get Joe Biagini some starts, and they're going to stretch him out look at Brett Oberholzer, look at Mike Bolsinger, look at Lucas Harrell, and try to get a sense of where the pecking order might lie in depth starters in case they have a need at some point. So that's what I would expect. That's where I expect to see some differences, that, you know, they're going to let them individualize their programs a bit more, not really feel the need to rush them to get ready, just because, you know, they did not only log a lot of innings during the regular season, but they went deep into October too. So that's another thing they have to manage and consider.
Last question, Shai, just kind of pivoting off of what you were just talking about. You did a bit of reporting yesterday about the World Baseball Classic and Blue Jays, you know, pitchers who might be going and might not be going. I mean, what do you know about how the WBC, how this tournament is going to affect the Blue Jays this spring?
Well, I think the where it starts is that people look at like 10 players from the organization going to the WBC and they're like, wow, that's a lot. But it's not quite that much, because most of the pitchers named to the WBC squad were in their country's designated pitcher pools, which means that they can be chosen as subs in subsequent rounds. So, you know, Marco Estrada from Mexico, Jay Happ for the United States, Jake Fishman for Israel, and Leonel Campos for Venezuela are all are in the designated pitcher pool, so they're not going in the first round. Now, Roberto Osuna is going to the first round for Mexico, but he's listed as someone who's going to be subbed out for the second round. So he's only going to be gone for three games before he returns to camp with the Blue Jays. So there is the potential for disruption. Marcus Stroman is going to be with the United States team for as long as they're in the tournament. You know, Jose Bautista is going to the Dominican Republic, and certainly they've got a chance to go deep. And Dalton Pompeo is going to play center field for Canada, although they're going to be in tough to advance out of the first round. So there could be some substantial disruption, but it's not going to be as significant as the number of players would initially cause you to think.
Awesome, Shai. Hey, thanks for this. I do know who is going to the WBC, and that is one Shai Davidi, who will be following Team Canada throughout what will surely be a championship run on the shoulders of Eric Gagne and Ryan Dempster. We're looking forward to your reporting from there, and I encourage everybody to follow Shai on Twitter and follow his stuff throughout spring and the WBC. Thanks, Shai.
Thanks, fellas. Talk to you soon.
All right, our thanks to Shai Davidi, informative and insightful and interesting as always. Always good to talk to Shai. Follow him on Twitter. You probably already are. It's at Shai Davidi. Follow his reportage this spring at sportsnet.ca. He'll be down in Dunedin for about another week or so, and then Ben will come in, and Ben will be there for a couple weeks, and then I'll come in after Ben, and I'll be there for a couple weeks, and then far, far, far in the future, Shai will return and put a bow on it. And then we can start playing real, actual baseball games. If you want to hear Ben and I talk more about the Toronto Blue Jays, we're going to be on the Fan 590 on Saturday on the Sportsnet Hot Stove from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, talking all things Blue Jays with, I believe, Ben Ennis hosting.
Yes, and the beauty of live radio is that if some sort of hockey trade breaks during that time, then we'll be talking hockey. So get ready. Get your hockey takes ready. It should be fun. It'll be a lot of fun.
I'm hoping for, because I think you could keep up with the hockey stuff. I would probably lag a bit behind on the hockey stuff. I don't follow the hockey quite as closely.
But you'd be fine with basketball,
though. I'm hoping for a Raptors trade.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how closely you follow that stuff.
Not too closely.
I'm pretty ensconced in it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to be, if that happens, I'm just going to be throwing to you. Just like, Ben, what do you think Serge Ibaka is going to bring? How do you think this will affect Corey Joseph's minutes in
the
rotation?
They got to get that rim protection. They got to spread out the floor. He delivers on both fronts. There you go.
He's a real presence under the basket, and something the Raptors have been lacking, right? You just go to that. You just pay that kind of stuff.
Perfect.
There you go. Hey, thanks to all of you for listening. We're going to be back every week. We might actually even have a special ATL coming up soon, perhaps a special little bonus episode. Maybe a little bit of that. Maybe you want to keep us subscribed on iTunes so that you can see what kind of things we're cooking up. Please do subscribe on iTunes. We need it. Read us on sportsnet.ca. Listen to us on the Fan 590. All that good stuff. That's all I have to plug. Thank you very much. Oh, our producer is Sam McKee. At Sam A. McKee on Twitter. Ben's on Twitter at B. Nixon Smith. Thanks for coming along with us. We'll talk to you next week, maybe even sooner, on At The Letters.